It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Welcome to episode 733 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, December 5th, 2021. I am the Solo Monster. Busy, busy night in the wrestling world last night. We had Triple Mania, we had an NWA pay-per-view, and we had a GCW show. El Hijo del Vikingo is the new AAA Mega Champion. He beat Samurai del Sol, Jay Lethal, Bobby Fish, and Bandido in a five-way match. This was originally going to be Kenny Omega defending the AAA Mega title against Vikingo, but Omega surrendered the title due to injury, or else I'm sure he would have dropped it in the ring finally. So they turned it into a five-way for the vacant title. I did not see the show. I heard much of it was a shit show, as a lot of these Triple Mania shows tend to be. FTR was there with Vicky Guerrero in their corner, successfully defending their AAA tag team titles in a ladder match against the Lucha Bros, Penta and Rey Fénix. Fénix was not injured, as they said on Dynamite this week. He was replaced in the match on Rampage by Pac against FTR on Friday due to a travel issue. He was not able to make it into Atlanta on Wednesday, and so that is why he was not on the show. He was healthy to go, though, last night. And the match ended when, I guess, Rey Fénix was down somewhere. Penta was on the ladder. I guess he was trying for the championship. And Vicky threw some sort of powder in Penta's face. That caused him to fall off the ladder through a table. And Dax Harwood grabbed the belts to retain. So interesting, they're keeping the titles on FTR a little bit longer, it appears. I think it's great. The idea of FTR getting heat in Mexico is too perfect. I can picture it like the old days, where when the event is over, they got a car running, the engine is running, they dive into the back seat, people swarming the car as they drive off. It's like the old days. And they aired a video with the return of Taya Valkyrie, the former Frankie Monet, who called out the Reina de Reinas champion, Deonna Purrazzo, saying Purrazzo had something that belonged to her, that being the championship, which Taya has held three times before. She spent 8 years of her life working for AAA until last year, before going to NXT, where they evidently were surprised to find out that she had been hired. And once they realized it, they fired her, because she did absolutely nothing during her time at NXT. You know, there's an old episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David gets an opinion from someone he thinks is a doctor. He's in a hospital, and he's got this mole or something on his body, and he wants the doctor to take a look at it, and the guy says, sure, I'll take a look at it. And if I remember it right, I think he said, oh, it looks fine, just, you know, stay out of the sun or something. It's not cancerous, don't worry about it. He comes to find out later on the guy was not a real doctor. He was a patient from one of the other floors in the psych ward, masquerading as a doctor. It may have been some mentally disturbed person who called Taya and offered her a contract, and then when she showed up at the PC, they had no idea why she was there. But they went with it for a while, and then they realized they had no use for her, and they cut her. That's as good of an explanation as any. Meanwhile, the NWA had its Hard Times 2 pay-per-view. If you saw any screenshots of the event, it looked like they fell on hard times with that crowd. It looked like they had 50 people in the audience in that studio. It was very sad to watch. Apparently, they only learned a few days before the show that because the studio is funded by the government, they were forced to adhere to a very strict COVID protocol, and they would not allow more than 90 fans to attend the show. So they had to refund a bunch of people their money who had already, I guess, bought tickets. It looked depressing to see that, but I guess it was not entirely their fault. Mick Foley made an appearance on the show. He did a promo. He was wearing a Santa hat. This is his favorite time of year. And he did come back out for another appearance at the end of the show. Trevor Murdoch retained his NWA World's Heavyweight title over Mike Knox in the main event. There's a name I have not thought about in years. Mike Knox. Matt Cardona then showed up. This guy is everywhere. This guy's living his best life since leaving WWE. He aligned with Knox, and then the Pope showed up. Not the Pope. He wouldn't appear in a half-empty studio. The Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, ran out to attack Cardona, who threw him into the ring steps, and Cardona posed with the NWA title to close out the show, teasing a future match. We could very well be getting NWA World's Heavyweight Champion Matt Cardona very soon, after having seen GCW Champion Matt Cardona. And look, my hat's off to the guy, and I don't even wear hats. All those years spent toiling away in WWE, just happy to collect a paycheck, he leaves, and he completely, or I guess he got released, but he leaves, and he completely reinvents himself, and is having the best run of his life. But when he threw the Pope into the ring steps, the Pope was legitimately hurt. His body went limp after taking the bump. After they went off the air and the fans had already left the building, he was still down. He was still being tended to. An ambulance was called to take him to a local medical facility. And per PW Insider, as of 3 o'clock this morning, he was still in the ER, having x-rays and other tests done to see where things stand. It sounds like he got his bell rung pretty good. Hopefully it's nothing worse than that. And on top of all that, there was a GCW show in Dallas that saw the Briscoes retain their GCW tag team titles, and Thunder Rosa tapped out Alley Catch with a rear naked choke in what was said to be an excellent match. A very eventful night, one that saw me pass out in my chair at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to finish my notes for today's podcast. I've got NXT War Games predictions for tonight's pay-per-view. Bad ratings news for AEW Dynamite this week. I've got some thoughts on the Liv Morgan promo that had people talking on Raw this week. And the promo segment with Edge and The Miz. Rumors of Walter possibly coming to the WWE main roster. And if it happens, I will tell you how it should be done. And the end of an era for WWE home video. So a lot to get into this week. I want to thank you all for your support. And I want to give a shout-out before we get into anything else here. I want to give a shout-out to a friend of the show, Barry from Hawaii, at BarryMK200 on Twitter, if you want to find him on there. It looks like he's been in a bit of a funk. We've all been there. It sucks. Barry's a good dude. So, brother, may your tomorrow be better than today. Sending you much love here from New York. And I want to also show some love for all of our PayPal supporters, our PayPal posse, as I call them. I love the idea of them rounding up people for me and kicking their ass. My PayPal posse, you guys have been very supportive all year long, and that's why I shout you out on every single show. Every person who drops a PayPal here on the show, I salute you and I acknowledge them here. And, you know, $10 or more, you get the funny nickname that you submit or I come up with one for you. It's the least I can do. If you would like to support via PayPal, which is the most direct way that you can support the show outside of just sharing and telling other people about it. You want to support via PayPal, whether it's for the holidays or otherwise, the email address is thesolemonster@gmail.com, or you can just go to thesolemonster.com and click the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. We got the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton dropping a bomb this week, and he also celebrated a birthday on Friday. So happy belated birthday to Paul. Although I emailed him already, but I want to wish him a happy birthday here. Paul is a huge supporter, not only here on the audio show, but on YouTube as well. Ostentatious Alan Carter. Alan, it is much appreciated, sir. Night Stalker Nayef Al-Safar. Big Bear Bryant Becerra. Killshot Keith Hart. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, John Raging Mad Riffle, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd, and Malevolent Michael Timoney. And also, Howard the Duck Donnie. Haven't had a Howard the Duck reference in a long time. He wants you to check out his gaming channel on YouTube called Donnie Games. That's all one word, capital D, capital G, because there might be more than one. Donnie Games, it is the one with the red logo. He is a comedy gamer with an Irish temper who loves to make people laugh. So search Donnie Games on YouTube and check out his content. And if you saw Tony Nese make his Rampage debut on TNT Friday night, challenging Sammy Guevara for the TNT Championship, the two had a very good match, then you heard his new theme song by our good friend John Kiernan, featuring James Wamsley on vocals from Daybreak Embrace and Lucid Drive. It's a song called The Premier Athlete. The song is live on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, and other platforms. Just search for John Kiernan or Tony Nese theme. And my congrats to John for the airplay on TNT Friday night. If you missed it, there is a brand new video installment of RSPW Rewind. It's been a few months since the last one. Episode 36 went up on Tuesday exclusively for our channel members on YouTube. They got it early for the first 3 days, and then it went public for everybody else on Friday. So thank you for the feedback, those who have sent in comments or left comments under the video. You know, we are headed, hopefully, in these next couple of months. We're getting close. We're not there yet, but we're getting close to 300 channel members on YouTube, which that's my next big goal. That would be incredible if we could hit that mark in these next few months. I can't do it without you guys. So if you are interested in becoming a Sound Off channel member, there are two membership tiers. You can look them up on the channel. All the information is there. You get some perks like early access to features like RSPW Rewind. So definitely give that a look. This coming Saturday, I can't believe it's already time for show number two. House of Glory presents For the Glory at the NYC Arena in Queens with Malakai Black making his Hog debut to face the Amazing Red. Buddy Matthews also debuts, challenging Low Key for the Crown Jewel Championship. Cashflow Ken Broadway takes on TJP, and the Bollywood Boys make their Hog debut against the main event, Jay Lyon and Ringleader Midas. The circus is coming to town, folks. There is a meet and greet with Malakai at 5 p.m. Bell time is 7 p.m., and the event will be streaming live as it did last month on Fight TV. I will be on commentary calling my first Malakai Black match. I'm very much looking forward to that. Tonight is the first non-takeover NXT pay-per-view, the first of the 2.0 era, War Games. I will be live on YouTube for the recap as soon as the war is over. Beth Phoenix tweeted on Thursday that tonight's War Games pay-per-view will be her last on commentary for the NXT brand. She said, "While I will remain a part of WWE, I have made the choice to step away from the weekly broadcast booth to spend more time with my family. This was not an easy decision, as I have loved my 3+ years and 135 episodes with NXT, and I am incredibly proud of the brand. I will forever be grateful to Vic Joseph." Oh! Sorry. It's a creature of habit there. Wade Barrett, Nigel McGuinness, Tom Phillips, Mauro Ranallo, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Michael Cole, and my entire NXT family, both in and out of the ring, for the amazing opportunity. NXT will always be a part of me, and Auntie Betty will always be a part of NXT. Leave the porch light on for me. Another one bites the dust. Last week it was Scotty Too Hotty saying, "Peace out, NXT, it's been fun." And this week, it's Beth Phoenix. This is on the heels of a report from Brian Alvarez, who says that he has heard from employees who work there who say that NXT just isn't fun anymore. It's not an enjoyable environment like it used to be. Now, I don't know if that's why she's leaving. That's a pretty positive statement that she put out. I mean, you never know with these public statements, so I don't know if one has to do with the other. If it really is to spend more time with her family, then it wouldn't make any sense for her to leave NXT to go work a program on the main roster on Raw with her husband against Miz and Maryse, if we take her reasoning at face value. But it looks like a likely destination, I would say, after Edge and Miz work their first match together, they do a mixed tag on the Raw brand, maybe on a pay-per-view. I'll talk more about the Edge and Miz stuff in a little bit. Here's the lineup for tonight with some thoughts on Tuesday's show mixed in, the go-home show. We have the Women's War Games match. Raquel Gonzalez, Io Shirai, Cora Jade, and Kaylee Ray against Dakota Kai, Mandy Rose, Gigi Dolin, and JC Jane of Toxic Attraction. Kaylee Ray and Dakota Kai had a really good ladder match this week to determine which team would have the advantage. It was easily the best thing on the entire show. Not surprising, since it was really a battle of the old guard. I know Kaylee Ray is new to the main NXT brand, but you know, this woman dominated for so long on NXT UK as their women's champion. She already comes in as a veteran. She's got a wealth of experience. We know Dakota Kai has been around for a while. So, of course, the 1.0 guard is going to go in there and deliver a great match. Kaylee Ray won the advantage for the babyfaces, which is always a very odd choice for a War Games match. You give the heels the advantage, typically, to stack the deck against the babyfaces. But they gave the 2.0 crew the man advantage in the other War Games match, and I guess they're the heels in that one, so they didn't want to do the same thing in both matches. Aside from that, I thought this was great. I'm going to go with Io, Raquel, Jade, and Kaylee Ray for the win. They are a much better team. Just on paper, you look at it, the talent on that side of the ring is pretty stacked. But I also think they use the finish of this match to set up for whoever is next in line to challenge Mandy Rose for the NXT Women's Championship. That, to me, is either Cora Jade or Io Shirai. And Cora Jade already has a pinfall win over Mandy. So I think they should use this to set up her next challenger, which is why I have the babyfaces going over. Imperium. Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel defend the NXT Tag Team Championship against Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner, who earned the shot by defeating Legado del Fantasma on Tuesday. This is Imperium's first title defense since winning the belts at Halloween Havoc. O'Reilly and Wagner, they have not gelled at all as a team, no matter how hard they try. And then there's the issue of O'Reilly's contract status. He should be on his way out the door. But even if he isn't, he and Wagner as a tag team, let alone tag team champions, is just a terrible idea. They do not work as a team. They have negative charisma together. So this should be an easy one. Slam dunk, Imperium retains. In what could be and should be Kyle O'Reilly's final match in NXT. I suppose, you know, without knowing exactly what his contract end date is, even if he does end up leaving, we don't know the specific day. You know, we've heard about Johnny Gargano signing a one-week extension so he could do War Games because his contract was up on the 3rd. We never got a firm date on O'Reilly other than it's sometime in December, so it's possible his contract is not up yet. And they could still use him on TV and do some kind of blow-off. They could do some kind of loser-leaves-town stipulation if they know he's leaving and, you know, have him lose to somebody on TV, have Von Wagner turn on him. They could do any number of things. So we don't know for sure if this is going to be it for him, but he should definitely be on his way out. There is no future. There is no good future for Kyle O'Reilly in NXT or on the main WWE roster. I believe that to be true, and I believe that he should be on his way out. We have hair versus hair. Cameron Grimes against Duke Hudson. They did a lame job of sending this thing home on Tuesday. They had Hudson showing photoshops of what Grimes would look like bald. I mean, the same tired shtick that we've seen before. And sometimes they can make it funny, but that wasn't the case here. We've had the chance to see a more serious side of Grimes recently. They already gave him a bit of a makeover with the shorter haircut. I think it's Hudson's turn to get a trim and for Grimes to get his revenge. We do not need to see Cameron Grimes bald. That is a horrible idea. I think Duke Hudson is going bald. I got Cameron Grimes picking up the win. Roderick Strong defends the NXT Cruiserweight Championship against Joe Gacy. Gacy hosted an all-inclusive invitational on Tuesday, basically a gauntlet involving one smaller wrestler, one heavier wrestler, shall we say, and one female wrestler, pointing out that the Cruiserweight division allows for a toxic environment and that his invitational will not allow for any bias based on gender, height, or weight. And he quickly beat the small guy, but before he could wrestle the woman, Diamond Mine interrupted. Roddy decked Gacy in the face. He came back with a handspring into the ropes like he's fucking Jay Lethal out there trying for a lethal injection. And came off the ropes and he clobbered Roddy with a lariat. You know, WWE may as well give the entire Cruiserweight division and the title to go along with it a lethal injection. I am not at all surprised about the rumors going around that WWE is thinking of abandoning the Cruiserweight title. What have they done with the Cruiserweight Championship in the last few months? You know, Kushida had it for a while, but what have they done with it recently? What have they done with the Cruiserweight title? They've done nothing with it. At this point, it's only one step below the 24/7 title and the women's tag team titles, and that's pretty damn low on the totem pole. 205 Live has been a dead brand now for most of the year. Remember earlier this year, in one of the big release waves, they basically released the entire roster that would wrestle on 205 Live. I don't even know why it exists, other than maybe they have TV contracts overseas that they have to fulfill. That's about it. They seem to be all in on Gacy's new cult leader gimmick. I have Gacy winning, and I think he's going to win the Cruiserweight title. He's going to rebrand it as something else entirely. I wish they did allow some intergender stuff, because I think Ivy Nile could have laid a believable beatdown on Joe Gacy. I like Diamond Mine, so I prefer to see them kept strong, but WWE has never taken their Cruiserweight division seriously, and there really is no need to even have a Cruiserweight title. There really is no need for it. And the men's War Games match, old school versus new school, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Pete Dunne, and LA Knight against Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes, Grayson Waller, and Tony D'Angelo. Ciampa posted on Instagram, "If tonight is the last time we share a ring together, then I've got two words for you. Thank you." And he included a collage of all these images of him and Gargano together in NXT as DIY from the moment they first debuted and walked into William Regal's office until, you know, some of the more recent stuff. This could be the last ride for DIY tonight, because Johnny Gargano is good to go for tonight's show, but after that, he is without a contract. He is a free agent. Unless he signs something today, he will be a free man. And he has yet to, I guess, make a decision on what his future is going to be, or at least clue WWE in as to what his future is going to be. I suppose if he doesn't sign anything, you know, once tonight is over, he could theoretically show up anywhere. You know, you're not bound to any kind of a non-compete if your contract runs out. Only if they release you early. My gut tells me that of the two, we've been talking a lot about Gargano, talking a lot about O'Reilly, and they probably have similar futures if they stick around in WWE, and I don't think the future is good. For anybody expecting them to be used in a meaningful, almost like a top position, you are going to be severely disappointed if they stick around or make the WWE main roster. Now, maybe somebody like Gargano, you know, if he was used properly, maybe he wouldn't be a world champion. Maybe he would settle in nicely in upper mid-card status or something. I'm not even optimistic about that. But my gut tells me there's a much better chance of O'Reilly leaving than Gargano. I'm not convinced Gargano is leaving this company. You know, he might let his contract lapse and take a little bit of a break, but of the two, I think there's a better chance that we see Kyle O'Reilly popping up on Dynamite soon, as opposed to someone like Johnny Gargano. Again, just a gut feeling that I have. But this could be the final ride tonight for DIY. They did a fan vote online to determine the participants in the men's ladder match on Tuesday to see who would get the man advantage in War Games. The fans allegedly chose Johnny Gargano and Bron Breakker, which I could believe. I could see them voting for those two. So they picked those two guys. I enjoyed the match. It was not as good as the women's ladder match, I don't think. Breakker got the win for his team, which means the new school gets the advantage tonight. And like the other War Games match, I believe the team with the advantage is going to get the win. I think with Gargano's contract ending, I believe that he does the J-O-B, like he did on Tuesday. And I think it's Bron Breakker who wins it for the 2.0 crew. He is on his way to a rematch soon with Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT Championship. They've been teasing it. He said he wants it. I think it would be appropriate for him to get the win for his team. Carmelo Hayes is the North American champion. I mean, he could score the winning fall also, and that would be fine. The crowd reaction to these two teams is going to be very interesting because you've got Bron Breakker tagging with basically three heels. And Bron Breakker, when he comes out, is treated like a babyface. The people like him. But he's tagging with three heels. I mean, I know the crowd loves Tony D'Angelo, but they're booked like heels. Bron is the only one who is not. If the 1.0 crew does win, it could be that maybe things break down between the members on the 2.0 side and Bron Breakker lays out some of his own guys. Maybe they end up getting in his face. He doesn't like that. Or there's some kind of miscommunication. He gets nailed and he just goes berserk and he starts killing his own teammates. You know, I've thought about that too as a potential, you know, way the match plays out. And that could then hand the win to the veteran side. In either of those scenarios, Bron Breakker comes out of it as the star, which sets him up nicely for the rematch with Ciampa. I'm going with the 2.0 crew. I think it's going to be Breakker and Hayes and that team that walks out with the win. And that is your card for tonight. I will be live on YouTube as soon as the show ends for the review, so watch for the event page to go up later. It usually goes up a few hours before, so you guys can jump in there, hit that like button, and start chatting away. You need to subscribe to the channel if you have not already done so. Make sure that bell is turned on for notifications. So if you are not subbed, one of my great resolutions, my New Year's resolutions for 2022 is to push that harder because I don't push it hard enough. Subscribe to the channel and make sure those notifications are set to the on position. Amazon Music Unlimited is offering a holiday trial to all new subscribers. 3 free months when you sign up using our link. GetAmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. That's 3 times the length of their usual trial offer. Now for a limited time. If you sign up anytime through January 10th, you get 3 free months to try out the service. You can even listen to the sound off on there. They have the podcast on there as well to listen to, but they got tons of music, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of podcasts. And when you use our link, you are helping out the podcast. So jump on that. GetAmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. You don't have to wait until January 10th. I got an even better date for you. December 5th. That's today. Don't wait. Sign up now and get 3 free months. AEW Dynamite on Wednesday was down in the ratings from the previous week on Thanksgiving Eve. They averaged 861,000 viewers on TNT. That is the lowest audience for a Dynamite in its regular time slot since May 19th. There is no positive way to spin that, especially coming off an episode that was almost universally praised. It was an excellent show the week before. A lot of word of mouth, got a lot of people talking. And they dropped. The following week, they dropped against very little competition outside of the usual. They're only drawing a couple of 100,000 viewers more than NXT 2.0 with all of the developmental talent that nobody knows. You know, for a show that has loaded up with names like CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Darby Allin and Sting and others, they even advertised a rare Sting TV match for this week. And that didn't seem to help much. Now, the sky isn't falling or anything, but there's no way to put a happy face on that unless you're one of the all-elite bots. There is no positive spin to that. They were doing over 1 million viewers a week. For a long stretch, they had settled into 1 million, 1.1 million, 1.2 million. They were in that range, and they had a good rhythm going. And they have not touched 1 million since my birthday, which was almost 2 months ago. They were really hurt by being knocked out of their usual spot by baseball those 2 weeks. When that happened, they have not gotten back since then. And it has been 6 weeks. Now, you had Thanksgiving in there, but still, 6 weeks it's been, and they still have not been able to get back to those pre-baseball levels that they were at, and they should have rebounded by now, and they haven't. Now, the Winter is Coming show on the 15th with Hangman Page and Bryan Danielson. That should get them back. They should get them back to where they were. If not, then that's even worse. Because if they can't get back to where they were before with a big main event like that, and who knows what other matches they're going to announce this week, that's not a good sign. But we'll see what happens next month, because they're in a lame duck period right now on TNT. We know their run on TNT on Wednesdays, outside of these quarterly specials they're going to be doing, is about to come to an end. And they are moving to TBS. The first TBS show is January 5th. They should be loading that show up. Now, they have a Battle of the Belts special 3 days after that, so they have to figure out which show do they want to load up more. Do they want to load up the first TBS Dynamite more? Do they want to load up Battle of the Belts? Do they want to load them up equally? At least one of those shows is going to have an AEW championship match. I would imagine Battle of the Belts, given the name of the show. So again, it's not a situation where the world is collapsing around AEW, but Tony Khan, every single week, was putting out tweets talking about the ratings and talking about the demos and thanking everybody, and we were getting press releases every single week. TNT couldn't put those press releases out fast enough about where they were in the ratings that week, and you'll notice that they've been pretty quiet. So, you know, when you talk about that stuff a lot, all of a sudden you're not quite at that level that you were at before. Things get quiet, people notice that. And again, they'll be fine if they move to TBS and things get back to the way they were and you don't have the West Coast issue anymore, which they won't have that problem anymore once they go to TBS. I take it that going live on the West Coast, which is something TNT wanted to do, that only started, I think, about a month and a half ago or so, somewhere around then. That did hurt them a little bit, but it still doesn't explain why they would have been down by that much this week. They won't have that issue when they go to TBS. It's going to be clean slate, fresh start for them. But when you talk about the ratings and you talk about the demos, as you know, Tony Khan and a lot of them like to do, and that's fine, people notice, though, when things are down and all of a sudden we're not getting the big press releases anymore. It's like, where did they go? where did they disappear to? As long as TNT is still happy, then that's all that matters. But now they're going to have to go to TBS and deal with a whole different bunch of executives who hopefully will be equally as happy with AEW as the TNT folks have been. Bryan Danielson on Wednesday beat Allen Angels in his hometown of Atlanta. And he will face John Silver in Long Island this Wednesday, where John Silver is from. That's going to be their first show at the new UBS Arena. The championship match is official, with Bryan Danielson challenging Hangman Page at Winter is Coming, the Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite in less than 2 weeks. Do they have the guts? This is the question I posed on the stream on Wednesday. Do they have the guts to do a 60-minute draw on TV? I believe all world title matches have a 60-minute time limit. We already saw a 30-minute draw with Danielson and Omega, although that was not for the championship. But do they have the guts to do a 60-minute draw? What finish do you do between Danielson and Hangman? Because I can't imagine this is going to be the only match these two have. You've got two big shows coming up that first week in January. You've got to have a rematch on one of those shows. It just seems natural. You're going to have a rematch on one of those shows. What finish do you do here to necessitate a rematch, let's say a Battle of the Belts, between these two? They don't do interference disqualifications hardly ever in AEW. In fact, I can't remember a single time where they've done an interference disqualification finish. The only disqualification finish I can remember AEW doing was in a 30-minute. I think that also was a 30-minute Ironman match between Pac and Omega on Dynamite last year. And it was the first fall, I think, of that match. There might have been a DQ. That's it. AEW is very good about not doing bullshit disqualification finishes, although there is always a time and a place to do a DQ finish. But they don't do them. They don't abuse them the way WWE does, and it's one of the things I appreciate about the AEW product. Does somebody get involved, though, in this match? Is there a big debut on this show? I don't think we're getting a Wyndham Rotunda debut on Winter is Coming. I know some people are talking about it, and I would be kind of surprised. It's not something I'm expecting. Maybe it'll happen. It's not something I'm anticipating. or that he would factor into this match in some way. So unless Danielson is winning, and then he quickly drops the belt back to Omega, or back to Hangman, rather, which I don't really see the purpose in doing that. This is his first title defense. You're going to take the championship off Hangman in his first title defense? I think that would be kind of foolish. So I wonder if they would have the guts to go 60 and go to a draw and then do a rematch and have Hangman beat him there at Battle of the Belts. Scott Fishman of TV Insider did an interview with Bryan Danielson. And at the end of the interview, he revealed something kind of interesting about what his goals are for 2022. And he talked about wanting to get a group together in AEW, which includes one or two younger talents. This is what he said. If I can get a group together, I'm thinking of a younger talent or two, and that develops into stories within that. Look at Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho. By Sammy joining the Inner Circle, he'd become a bigger star. He then stepped up to the plate and hit home runs. That is how you build young stars. A guy that comes to mind for me is Daniel Garcia. The one show my wife and I could not stop watching was Game of Thrones. It just made you come back every week. Helping AEW, I want to help that need for viewers to come back every week. I think they've already created the best wrestling product in the United States that we have seen in years. Helping to get more fans watching and give the feeling like it's must-see television every week. Those are my overarching goals, not only for this year, but the 3 years that I am here. Daniel Garcia is somebody who has been getting a lot of attention. We have seen him actually in a number of main events on TV. He's been in the ring with Danielson. He's been in the ring with Punk. He's been in the ring with Eddie Kingston. He's been in the ring with a whole bunch of different people. And Daniel Garcia, given his style of wrestling and how mat-based he is, I think he would be a great fit for a group with someone like Bryan Danielson. Him and 2.0, I think, with Danielson as sort of the leader of the group, could be a lot of fun. A lot of groups in AEW. We know this. We've talked about the number of alliances and factions that they have in this company. A lot of three-man groups. I saw Malakai Black was teasing a possible group in his Instagram stories. He said, the house will be grateful. Three will go. One will stand. Eventually, three stand together. I don't know about that third person, but I'm thinking Pac will end up standing with Black. You know, he has now been blinded by Malakai in both eyes with the black mist. He has corrupted this man, possibly. I can see Pac leaving Death Triangle to join with Malakai in the House of Black. Another reason we're going to see trios titles introduced in AEW next year. Danielson taking Daniel Garcia under his wing could be, you know, it could be transformative for the kid's career. It's like pairing Darby Allin with Sting. Darby was already a star. I mean, he was already over in the company. But by doing that, they added credibility of having Sting with him, and it boosted him that much more. Whatever juice Sting might have left and the Sting name, why not use it to help elevate somebody who could also use it, right? I mean, it also benefits Sting. It's not like it's just Sting doing charity work here. It benefits Sting because he can be protected in tag team matches instead of having to wrestle as a single, which is asking a lot at 62 years old. I mean, Sting has looked good, but Sting is better off doing tag team matches for the most part, and maybe the odd singles match every now and then against somebody who could bump around for him. But it's been a mutually beneficial thing, I think, with him and Darby. So the idea that Danielson here, he's kind of getting his shit in here early, right? He's challenging for the championship already. He's only been here for a couple of months. You know, even CM Punk, they've kept him away from Kenny Omega and from the world title. Eventually, Punk will challenge for the AEW championship. He might even win it. Danielson, though, he went full bore. His first match in against Kenny Omega, he's been working his way, you know, back up to a title shot. He won the Eliminator. He's challenging Hangman in 10 days or however many more days it is. And winter is coming. Once they get all of this out of the way, and I expect that he will do the honors for Hangman, then it becomes a question of, well, now where do you go with Bryan Danielson? And the idea of him forming a group, even though we have a ton of groups already in this company, I think it could be a lot of fun. And I think him mentoring someone like a Daniel Garcia could be, you can't come up with a single negative thing to say about that. I mean, that would be huge, I think, for his career, if he could do something like that. Also on that show on Wednesday, we had Cody against Andrade in the main event. They had an Atlanta street fight. And it was quite the visual, watching the end of that match with Brandy coming out, hosing the table down in lighter fluid, drenching the table in lighter fluid, and sparking it, flames shooting up into the air, and Cody attempting to hit a maneuver on Andrade from the top rope. Cody falls back first, backwards through the table. He is literally on fire, and he covers Andrade, and he wins the match. It was a dumb spot. It took balls. It takes a lot of courage to be standing up there and look back and see flames shooting up like that and then fall backwards into the fire. But it was completely unnecessary for a random television match with a man that he wasn't even engaged in any kind of blood feud with. I'm all for paying off these really like big grudges and blood feuds with a big match, hardcore match, or a cage match, or a Falls Count Anywhere match, hardcore match. You know, in that case, it makes sense. But this just felt completely unneeded. I've gone back and rewatched it a bunch of times. As cool as the visual was, it makes even less sense watching it back a second, third, and fourth time. I didn't notice it the first time because I was so wrapped up in the moment. But Andrade basically gave Cody a sliced bread off the top rope. Cody is the one who went through the table. We knew that. Andrade never even touched the table. But if you watch them coming off, it looks like Andrade is giving him a move down through the table. And yet he laid there and Cody pinned him and won the match. I would imagine Andrade didn't want to have anything to do with the flaming table. I can't say that I blame him. But he gave Cody a slice of bread and Cody is the one who pinned Andrade. So it wasn't even about that. It was about, we got to make this look cool. And they accomplished that, I guess. I mean, the visual, again, of Cody, he's got part of his arm is on fire before Andrade is patting it down to try to put him out. It's pretty obvious what happened here. And this I did point out on the stream on Wednesday. The only reason that this spot even happened was because Cody Rhodes was trying to win back the fans. He's trying to win the fans over and get a positive reaction. And he got a mixed reaction in Atlanta. It wasn't totally negative, but he has been getting negative reaction after negative reaction every single week, every city they go to, ever since the New York City show. And so after months of people booing him out of the building, this was Cody's way of going out there and putting his body on the line to pop the crowd and give them a moment to remember and get back in their good graces. You know, I saw in the Observer, Meltzer said he wanted to make a special moment in Atlanta. Well, that's all well and good. He did it because he wanted the babyface pop. And he got it. For one night, he got it. But the reaction he got in Atlanta will not be the same reaction he gets in Long Island this week. Just like it won't be the same reaction he gets in Texas for Winter is Coming if he's on that show. And whatever city they're in after that. And the one after that, every city is likely to be different. And what it confirmed to me watching that on Wednesday is that this man is not turning heel. I believe him when he says he is not interested in turning heel. He is content to be the John Cena of AEW as far as these reactions go. And it's a shame because there is a lot of potential, I think, in heel Cody and Brandy together as sort of the power couple, and it would open the door to a lot of new opponents for Cody to step into the ring with. But after seeing that spot, that is not a man who is turning heel anytime soon. And Big Swole has parted ways with AEW. She posted the following statement this week. Over the past couple of months, my life has taken on the mantra, grow, learn, and change. Dealing with shadow work took strength I didn't know I had. I thank God for my loving family because they got me through some of the roughest months of my life. But I realized the real test is application. So I took my leap, and after speaking with Tony Khan and AEW higher officials, we have decided not to renew my contract with All Elite Wrestling. This was a hard decision, but a needed one. I am grateful for their understanding and that we can mutually come to this agreement. I've enjoyed my time with AEW and I wish them all the best. I appreciate their love in welcoming me into the family. Today is my last day, and as bittersweet as it is, I am proud to say that I have lived my dreams while making a difference. That is Swole Mentality. She has been public about her struggles with Crohn's disease, and she missed a lot of time because of it. She did not specify if that had anything to do with her decision to leave, although she talked about some of the roughest months of her life. But again, she didn't specify if she was referring to her health there or not. Swole has not done much since her tooth and nail match with Britt Baker last year at All Out. They had that cinematic match at the dentist's office. And then she had a title match against Hikaru Shida after that. She was in the Casino Battle Royal of this year's All Out, but that was her only television match of the entire year. All of 2021, that was the only appearance she made on TV. I think there will be more like her next year, who we see exiting the company. Probably no major names, but people who choose to leave because, you know, Tony Khan is not going to fire anybody. But they leave because they feel they're lost in the shuffle. And again, I'm not saying that's the reason why Swole is leaving. It could be a combination of different things. But reading that statement made me think about what other people could be exiting the company. And because we don't hear about people exiting AEW, certainly at the rate that we do WWE. But I think it's inevitable that next year we're going to have people similar who are not high up in the pecking order in that company, but who choose to leave because they just feel like they're lost in the shuffle. And they're not getting the kind of opportunities that they would hope to get. That's what happens when you have such a large roster. Before I get into Raw and SmackDown, I know we have a lot of sports fans listening to this right now. A lot of you may also be into betting on those sports. And if you are one of those people, then you know how quickly the lines can change. You're probably better at it than I am. I am still learning, but I know enough to know that when you've got a lot riding on those odds, you want to make sure you're plugged in and have all the information you need to stay ahead of the curve. So before you place those bets, make sure you listen to The Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM for the best betting analysis out there. Michael Jenkins and Chelsea Messenger host The Daily Tip and break down all the important stuff to make sure that you are up on everything you need to know in order to bet smarter. They're a lot of fun to listen to, like two friends chatting it up. And they bring guests on the show as well, including bookmakers, Odyssey insiders, and BetMGM experts. So you always get different takes and you hear about new strategies. If you start listening to The Daily Tip each day, your friends are going to start wondering who or what you're plugged into. It's up to you whether or not you want to tell them. As much fun as it is to bet on the game, it's even more fun when you've got the inside scoop. So, ready to bet with an edge? Tune in to The Daily Tip, presented by BetMGM. Listen weekdays, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern, on Odyssey, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Raw on Monday was WWE's debut at the new UBS Arena in Long Island, the building where they have been outsold by the AEW Dynamite show coming there this Wednesday, outsold by a few thousand seats. Brian Alvarez claims there are those within WWE who actually believe that Tony Khan must be buying up tickets himself to artificially inflate the AEW numbers. They are in such a state of denial that they cannot fathom another wrestling promotion outselling them in the New York market. Instead of looking in the mirror and recognizing this is a problem of their own making, now they're inventing conspiracy theories to explain it away. They tried. They discounted the tickets. They were advertising two-for-one specials. They advertised Roman Reigns for the show, who isn't even on Raw. He came out for a dark match. And the crowd on Monday was mostly comatose, which is what happens when a lot of them probably got in for free. But yet, the piped-in crowd noise, if you'll notice, was loud as ever. It becomes more noticeable by the week that they are still piping in crowd noise. I told you that wouldn't change after they got fans back into the buildings. They found their new play toy. They were not going to give that up so easily. It's even worse when you hear them making all the noise, and yet they don't appear to be moving a muscle. Seth Rollins will get his WWE Championship match with Big E at the Day One pay-per-view on New Year's Day. By the end of the show, Kevin Owens was added to make it a triple threat, as predicted. I mean, look, somebody has to eat the pin, and that somebody is Kevin Owens. Rollins pinned Finn Balor. They had a good match. Rollins is the one challenging for the title, not Balor. So he had to win, and they had him thumb Balor in the eye before he curb-stomped him, I guess to try to protect him. They also booked that awful finish at Extreme Rules with the Demon as a way to try to protect him. So I don't know that I would want WWE protecting me. Can you imagine if this company sold their own line of condoms? There'd be a baby boom 9 months later. So much for protection. Vince McMahon was back on television with Austin Theory. No golden egg this time. Fightful Select had a report that WWE's original idea was somehow worse than the payoff that ended up happening on television with the egg. One of their ideas would have tied the 24/7 title in with the egg. Which is funny because I called it the 24/7 egg last week. That's basically how they were treating it anyway. But I guess The Rock's people rejected that idea. So we ended up with Austin Theory as the egg bandit, who just wanted to take a selfie with it. But out of all of this, it looks like Austin Theory is going to be sharing screen time with the chairman of the company. Now, in theory, that could be... Oh, God, I just realized what I did there. But it could be a good thing for him until it's, you know, forgotten about in a few weeks. But on this show, Vince McMahon invited Theory to sit with him in his office and watch the entire show, which sounds like absolute torture. And so does watching it with Vince McMahon. Vince also told him that if he ever stole from him again, and I quote, "I'll kill you." And throughout the night, they would cut back to Vince's office. He would be yelling at Theory for looking away and not looking at him in the face. He would ask for his opinion on certain segments. What'd you think of this? And Theory would give an answer that he didn't approve of, and he would tell him, "You need to be more attentive." And then at the end, he asked him what he had learned. "What'd you think of the show?" And Vince had told him earlier in the night, he said, "Expect the unexpected. When it comes to Monday Night Raw, expect the unexpected, pal. When it comes to Monday Night Raw." So Theory just parroted what Vince had told him earlier in the night. I mean, when was the last time we got a major surprise on this show? Monday Night Raw is the most predictable show on television. Expect the unexpected. If he got a good show, that would be unexpected. But when Vince stood up to shake Theory's hand, he slapped him across the face. Stephanie would be proud. And then he sat back down and he said, "You've got a lot to learn." So I guess Theory did not heed his advice about expecting the unexpected when he didn't see the slap coming. I think that was the lesson that he was being taught there. So Vince McMahon is mentoring Austin Theory now. He sees great potential in this kid. This is a very different McMahon and Austin pairing than the one that made the company millions of dollars all those years ago. But Austin Theory one day could be a star who makes the company millions of dollars and who makes millions himself. He has that potential. I don't see this as the start of any kind of long-term on-screen association with McMahon because I don't think Vince wants to be on TV. I think he came back on camera to make The Rock happy, to promote Red Notice. They probably got a nice payday out of it, which is why they did it. And now they figure, well, maybe we can get this new kid over by having Vince give him the rub for a few weeks, by associating with him. And then I would expect McMahon to crawl back into his crypt, backstage. The key is that they see big things in the future for Austin Theory. Which is why, if you remember on last week's podcast, before any of this even happened, I answered that one mailbag question that somebody sent in, and I said, I think that Austin Theory has a bigger upside in WWE than Sammy Guevara does in AEW. And Sammy has a ton of potential to do a lot more in AEW, but Theory is the future of this company. Yeah, we talk about the young pillars of AEW, Darby Allin, MJF, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy. Nobody ever talks about the young pillars in WWE. Probably because half of them will be released and they'll end up in AEW anyway. But Austin Theory is one of those pillars. Damian Priest, he's not, because Damian Priest is 39 years old, although he'll be a top star, but he's not one of the young pillars that you build around. Theory is only 24 years old. He was barely alive when Vince got punched in the face by Bret Hart. Rhea Ripley is another one. Rhea Ripley is only 25 years old. Bron Breakker in NXT is 24 years old. Carmelo Hayes is 27. Austin Theory could be a Royal Rumble winner in 2023. I think 2022 would be too soon. But I would have him take the United States Championship from Damian Priest. I could see that as a WrestleMania match that takes Theory to that next level. The CM Punk MJF segment was the talk of the wrestling world last week. Everybody was buzzing about it. So this week, WWE tried to get people talking with a pair of worked shoot promo segments that in both cases used some of the recent talent releases as a way to put heat on the heels. And in both cases, it came across horribly. Which isn't terribly surprising. This is, after all, the same company that scripted Paige fighting back tears, welling up in her eyes, scripted her to tell Charlotte Flair, "Your baby brother, he didn't have much fight in him, did he?" The same baby brother that died of a drug overdose. Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan had a contract signing for their Raw Women's Championship match tomorrow night. They piped in fake cheers for the match announcement. I thought Liv's fire in this segment was great. It was the best promo of her life, as far as her delivery goes. The rest of this was a fail. First of all, she played a clip of Becky Lynch crying during her post-match interview backstage at Survivor Series while she was talking about how much she and Charlotte Flair had been through and now they hate one another. It was a total babyface promo where she showed real emotion. And here's Liv Morgan, the babyface, in this feud, supposedly, mocking her for crying. "Who knew big time Bex cried like such a little baby?" This was a misfire. The people already don't want to boo Becky Lynch. Mocking her for showing real emotion in that promo doesn't make her look weak. It makes Liv Morgan look like a bully for making fun of her. But then came the line where she blamed Becky's big contract as the reason why her friends, that being Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan, are not around anymore. Was it classless? Yes. It's not Becky or Liv's fault. It's on Vince McMahon. It was his idea. He approved it. This is a company bringing in record revenue and profits most quarters. Absolutely nobody believes that to be true. If you're going to create a lie, at least make it believable enough that people can buy into. Nobody would believe that that would be true. It is completely nonsensical that Becky's contract is the reason why 80 wrestlers have lost their jobs so far this year. It's the same thing they did with Baron Corbin the night the McMahons were all in the ring together admitting their show is awful and that they would do better. And they're going to give the fans what they want. They're going to give us more of what we want. That was 3 years ago this month. Have you gotten what you want? Then they turn around in that same segment and they blame Baron Corbin in storyline for why the ratings had dropped. They tried to put all the heat on Corbin and make themselves out to be the heroes in the story. And I remember, you know, that laugh you hear. I incorporated it into the show intro, that maniacal Joker laugh. I lost my fucking mind that night. I'm pretty sure it was that night. It was that segment where I just lost my mind and I started just cackling at the thought of, as awful as their television show was at that time, and that was a bad period for them, that the McMahons are taking back control of Monday Night Raw. As if that was changing anything. And I laughed and I laughed. The idea that the McMahons are the heroes riding in on horseback to save the town, when they were the ones... they were the ones who burned it to the ground in the first place. And the people all cheer, "Yay!" the McMahons are back. Now things are really going to change. Because the people are sheep. They are sheeple. That's why that word exists, for people like that. They're going to rescue us from all the boring television inflicted upon us by the evil Baron Corbin. They were trying to be edgy in this segment. They tried to get people talking. They succeeded on that second point, but for all the wrong reasons, which is too bad because Liv Morgan was doing a good job otherwise. The material just did not support her. Becky then pitched the idea of a 10-woman tag team match with Team Liv against Team Bex for later in the show, which Liv's team won. It was Liv Morgan, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Nikki Ash, and Dana Brooke, beating Becky Lynch, Carmella, Zelina Vega, Doudrop, and Tamina, with Liv pinning Tamina. This was rough. Some awkward moments. Carmella took a hard clothesline from Rhea at one point, stayed down to collect herself. Looked like she got the wind knocked out of her. Lynch attacked her when the match was over, but Liv laid out the champion with her Oblivion finish. The match, even though it wasn't very good, the match served its purpose, which was to put Liv Morgan over as a credible challenger for the championship. They have done a decent job of trying to build up Liv Morgan, you know, with the win here, the forearm shot that she rocked Becky with backstage 2 weeks ago. Why can't they book Charlotte Flair's opponents to look credible like this? I mean, finally, this week, Toni Storm put a pie right back in Charlotte's face this week. But with Charlotte, usually, it's the opposite. Right? We've seen things play out on SmackDown plenty of times, or on Raw in the past, where it works out a little bit differently for Charlotte Flair's opponents. But here, the challenger stands tall. I don't think Liv Morgan is walking out of Raw tomorrow night with the championship, because I don't think Becky Lynch is dropping the title on a random episode of Monday Night Raw. And with the day one pay-per-view coming up in a few weeks, we're probably going to end up getting a rematch anyway. Randy Orton and Matt Riddle continue to be one of the few bright spots on this entire show. Riddle dressed up like Randy last week, so he pulled out a blonde wig to place upon the head of Randy Orton so that Randy would look like him. Randy looked like he was about to murder this man. And then they went out and they retained their tag team titles over Dolph Ziggler and Big Bob. I have to say, the new RK-Bro music is really good. And what I like about it is the fact that it's not your typical lazy WWE mashup they do where they just fuse the two songs together and it sounds horrible. They created an entirely new song. And they fuse together versions of both their music, but it is an entirely new track if you listen to it. And it's pretty good. Edge is back again. This guy's had more returns. I mean, if he was an investment portfolio, I could retire tomorrow. So many returns with this guy. He said the last time we saw him was his Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins, who he acknowledged is now the number one contender for the WWE title, which he said Rollins deserved because he was operating on another level right now. Yes, because if the man broke into my house where my family lived, I would put him over in glowing terms. He talked about wanting to move on to new challenges. He mentioned AJ Styles, Finn Balor, Big E, among others, as potential challengers. I pitched an Edge Kevin Owens program last week for the Royal Rumble, or WrestleMania, if Owens were to stick around. The only reason I didn't mention AJ Styles, that was by design, is because he's still stuck in tag team hell with Omos, with no end in sight. But if he frees up, then that's another match they need to do. And WrestleMania would be a great place for it. If Owens is leaving, you do Edge and Owens for the Royal Rumble, and then Edge against AJ Styles for WrestleMania. That is a WrestleMania match. But instead, he was interrupted here by The Miz. My first reaction was to groan until I saw Maurice, and that perked me up a little bit because Maurice is fantastic. And it looks like this is not just a one-off. Maurice is back on TV. They had matching outfits on the back. It said Miz on his, it said Mrs. on hers to play off their reality show name. Miz was very annoyed that Edge got the big return treatment in the pyro, and he didn't. And Edge said that Miz complains too much. He ran down his list of accomplishments, Miz's accomplishments, and how far he has come since the days of Tough Enough. He said Miz even has people on other shows using his name to get cheap heat. And I thought that was a nice little dig. See, that worked. That's a perfectly fine, perfectly logical line for him to throw in there. Miz gets mentioned on Dynamite last week, and then the Miz happens to return to TV the following Monday. You have to bring that up. I mean, it was a layup, and Edge took it. But then they had to go back to the lame mention of John Morrison being fired, without mentioning him by name, saying that Miz only uses this as a launching pad to his next outside project while his tag team partner is left behind to get fired. That wasn't as tacky as having Liv blame Becky's contract for why her friends got fired, but these releases, you have to understand something. This is not a matter of, oh, you're being soft. These releases, especially letting go of someone like John Morrison, did not reflect well on this company. And to draw more attention to it and then use it as a way to get heat on an angle that doesn't need it is fucking lame. Edge challenged him to a fight. Miz teased that he was ready to throw down. Then, of course, he bailed out to the floor. It is striking how loud and into the Punk and MJF stuff the AEW crowd was, and how tame the WWE crowd was for the Edge and the Miz stuff. I mean, they tried to be edgy here, no pun intended, and to me it just didn't work. They tried to spark something between these two out of nothing. Edge usually in these situations is great. He wasn't terrible here, but this didn't feel as special as I think they were hoping it would come off as. I will keep an open mind, though. The thing with Miz, through the entire Thunderdome era, they did him and Morrison dirty, and I say that fully understanding that they put the WWE title on The Miz earlier this year. But the majority of that Miz and Morrison run, those two were treated like comedy fodder. The stuff with Braun Strowman, the zombie garbage, the comically absurd number of matches with Damian Priest, the dripstick nonsense. So when I see Miz, I groan, but a lot of that is the creative, you know, did nothing to support him and make me want to see him. These two have not had much interaction before. I think they've had maybe two or three matches together on TV in the last 10 years. So it's not a match. Now, granted, Edge missed 9 years. I understand that. But even before Edge went away, these two didn't wrestle very often. It's not a match that ever had the big pay-per-view treatment. They've never worked a big program together. But I am hardly excited for an Edge against Miz match. There are at least three or four other opponents for Edge that excite me far more on the Raw brand, but they chose the Miz. It's unlikely that Edge is working three programs between now and WrestleMania, so the Miz one may carry things through at least the Royal Rumble. This may be going on for a while, but Owens or Styles has to be the choice for WrestleMania. Edge and Miz could square off at day one. They could build to a mixed tag if they want to bring Beth Phoenix in and do something with Miz and Maryse against Edge and Beth. They could do that. I just hope that's not the WrestleMania match. But with Beth leaving the NXT booth, that makes it more likely, I think, that we see her end up in the mix on the main roster. She had a nice little run in that Royal Rumble match a couple of years ago where she cracked her head open and kept wrestling. You know, Beth can still go. And Kevin Owens defeated Big E by disqualification to earn his way into the WWE title match at day one. Seth Rollins was ringside for the match on commentary. He was livid when Adam Pearce told him about the stipulation. Rollins knew that if he put his hands on Owens, he would be handing Owens the win, but he got played anyway. He let his emotions get the better of him. Late in the match, Owens started climbing up to the top, but suddenly he stopped. He attacked Seth Rollins. He beat the hell out of him at ringside. Rollins then got into the ring. He attacked Owens for the DQ. Insanely stupid on his part for taking the bait, because now it is a triple threat instead of a singles match at day one. And hey, you know, the contract that Seth won in that match, that ladder match, entitled him to a WWE Championship match. It said nothing about what kind of match it would be, or how many other people might be involved. It only said that you were guaranteed a WWE title match. If I were Adam Pearce, that's how I would explain that. The story they told, I think, worked fine. As I said earlier, I believe Owens is in the match to take the losing fall, while Big E and Rollins continue their feud into the Royal Rumble. Tomorrow night, it's going to be Big E one-on-one against Kevin Owens inside a steel cage, and Becky defends her women's championship against Liv Morgan. On SmackDown Friday night, we had the return of the Beast. The return of the Lumberjack, Brock Lesnar. His suspension now lifted. He paid his $1 million fine. He came out. He was interrupted by Sami Zayn. By the way, I have seen a lot of hate online for Sami's new theme song. They took the beginning part of his theme music and then they turned it into something completely different. I see people crapping all over it. I'm just going to say it. I like Sami's new theme. I don't know where all the hate is coming from. I think it's just people who hate change. I like it. I like his new theme song. And I love the interplay between Sami and Brock. First time we've seen them doing anything together on TV in all these years. And I like seeing Brock come out of his shell. It's refreshing to see this side of Brock Lesnar. And he's pushing Sami. He's being his best friend. At first, he doesn't know who Sami is. He's like, are you a fan? Who are you? And then he warms up to him and he's pretending to like him. And he says, you know, you really should get that title match that you earned last week in that Battle Royal. You should get that match tonight against Roman Reigns. And not a day one, because it was going to be a day one. And Sami's like, yeah, I'm not really ready. And, my hip, I got a hip thing going on here. I don't think I'm prepared for this. And Brock basically convinced him, as only Brock can, grabbing his hand and squeezing very hard, he convinced Sami that, you know what, tonight would be a good match for me to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. So they established that as the main event here in the opening segment, but I like the interplay between these two. It was great. I also like the match between Sasha Banks and Shayna Baszler that followed this, and I hope to see more from these two. Sasha got the win, but this was really good stuff. An extended program between these two I think could be a lot of fun. After that first hour, the show went downhill. There was a match with the Viking Raiders and Los Lotharios that went about 90 seconds. Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs came out to play guitar and distract the heels, but it backfired and the Raiders got pinned. So the Viking Raiders lose this match because of this distraction from these idiots on the outside who are playing their music, right? They go outside the ring to confront Shinsuke and Boogs, right? The babyfaces are confronting the babyfaces about what just happened. And Rick Boogs starts playing the Viking Raiders theme song on his guitar, and that's enough for Eric and Ivar to forget what they were confronting them about, and they start pounding their chests like idiots, rocking out to the music. This was stupid. Why is Nakamura even involved in this? Why is he involved in this tag team nonsense when he's the Intercontinental Champion? Can we get that title off of him, please? Can we put the title on Sheamus? Sheamus needs to be the Intercontinental Champion. It's the only title that he cares about in his career. He's never been the Universal Champion. He may never be the Universal Champion. So he hasn't held that, but the only other major title he has never ever held is the Intercontinental title. And he's talked about it before, and I know it would mean a lot to him, but Sheamus has been doing some great work. He's been having some kick-ass matches. Let's get that title on him sooner rather than later, because the longer this shit drags on for, they are doing no favors for the Intercontinental title. Maybe they want to wait until WrestleMania, but I don't know that this title can survive that long. I mean, it is so relegated to the background right now. It's almost like, why even bother having it? Get it on somebody who can actually defend it on television. Xavier Woods beat Jey Uso by DQ, 2-minute match. Sheamus beat Cesaro in a 3-minute match. Ooh, they had 90 seconds more to do their thing. So we got bite-sized matches. That was the story of the show. It was more about the angles and not the in-ring. But outside of the main angle with Lesnar, there was nothing interesting about anything else on this show. If you're going to do angles, that's fine. Make them interesting. They failed to do that. As expected, Toni Storm got her revenge on Charlotte Flair by throwing a pie in her face, which did nothing to explain why Toni Storm allowed Charlotte to pie her in the face twice last week while she just stood there and did nothing about it. You have two very talented women in Charlotte and Toni Storm, and the best that these people can come up with for them to do on TV to build up their feud is throw pies at each other like a couple of circus clowns. You know, when I review these segments with these two from now on, I should play the RSPW clown music in the background. Maybe this week they'll drop green ooze on each other like they do on Nickelodeon. They'll slime each other. We got one final Xia Li comic book vignette before her debut this Friday. These videos have been great. Really well done. But the comic book writing now is over. Now it's the writing of Vince McMahon and Bruce Prichard. Oh boy. Best of luck to Xia Li. We had then what amounted to a 20-minute, maybe longer. It felt like twice that long. A 20-minute long break from the moment that Sami Zayn walked out for his entrance for the main event to the time the bell rang to start the actual match with Roman Reigns. This is exactly like what happened before the Rey Mysterio match on Raw a few weeks ago with Bobby Lashley. I have never in my life seen a company do so little with so much as far as television time is concerned. Sami comes out. He's in the ring, right? His music is playing. We then go to the back. Naomi confronts Sonya Deville. And Naomi wants a match with her. Are you going to give me my match? You're killing my glow. Are you going to give me my match? And Sonya says, yeah, I'll give you your match. And she slaps her in the face. Of course, Naomi can't do anything because as long as Sonya's in her suit, she's a WWE official and you can't put your hands on a WWE official. Unless you're Brock Lesnar. But I don't think Naomi has $1 million laying around to pay off her fine. So she smacked her in the face, but the match is official. It will be Naomi against Sonya Deville on SmackDown this upcoming Friday. So they do that segment, right? Then they recap Raw from earlier in the week. That's another 3 or 4 minutes right there. And they make the announcements about the matches on Raw coming up tomorrow night. Then we go back to Sami, who then cuts a promo and talks about this could be the biggest night of his career. He promised to win the championship. He's not going to thank the people. The only person he has to thank is Brock Lesnar, his new best friend. He said, I don't want to win the title in Texas, but Brock convinced me to take the match. So then Brock comes out. And Sami is heaping praise on Lesnar. And he made a comment to Brock. I thought this was genius, and it's one of the things I love about Sami Zayn. I love him in this character. How can you not like this guy? He slipped in a comment about, you know, Brock, you'd probably have a better chance against me at day one than you would Roman Reigns. And he pointed out, look, I'm not going to sell myself short when I say that. What I mean is, you don't have the best track record against Roman Reigns. And that was enough to send Lesnar over the edge, and he attacked Sami. He gave him some German suplexes. He hit the F5. The fans broke into a one more time chant, and Brock is now a man of the people. He gives the people what they want. He picks up Sami, gives him a second F5. Then he props Sami up, his dead body. He props him up in the corner, Weekend at Bernie style, to get ready for the match. Finally, Roman Reigns comes out with Paul Heyman. That's another 5 minutes for him to make his entrance. The bell rings, Roman hits the spear, he locks on the guillotine, Sami taps out immediately. This went 15 seconds. And then Roman Reigns and the Usos celebrated to end SmackDown. Again, more of an angle than a match. I know some people are going to be very upset about the way they use Sami Zayn. Sami in this character is playing his role great. His role is not to go in there as a heel and have a competitive long match with Roman Reigns. There is a time where a babyface Sami Zayn, and he will eventually go babyface again, if he sticks around. I guess we don't know what his contract status is, but whether it's here or in another company, Sami is a great babyface. He's also a great heel, but he's an even better babyface. And the matches that he used to have in NXT as the underdog babyface were so great, and the story that he could tell in his matches and the selling and everything, he's so great at it. There is a time where a babyface Sami Zayn in there as the underdog against Roman Reigns would have been a fucking fantastic match. This was not one of those times. This is conspiracy nut Sami Zayn. He's still got a documentary that we haven't seen. What I would love, and this is not a company that is known for their long-term storytelling, but what I would love, they keep bringing up the documentary. They didn't talk about it for a while, but they've been mentioning it recently. And I would love it if this documentary was a real thing. And one day Sami finally premieres this documentary. Even put it on the network. and they could show an abbreviated version of it on TV. But I would love it if we come to find out in the end that there really was a conspiracy against him. There's actual footage in there of WWE officials conspiring against this man, and we come to find out in the end that he wasn't some conspiracy kook. He actually was telling the truth. But I thought Sammy played his role perfectly fine here. Now the question is, you're going into day one. We now know that Brock Lesnar will face Roman Reigns on January 1st. They're going to have their rematch for the Universal Championship. What do you do in the rematch? Is Brock Lesnar really going to go in there twice in a row and lose to Roman Reigns? And if so, where do you go from there? I look at this and I say, this is the perfect opportunity to have somebody other than the Usos, because they interfered at Crown Jewel. You have somebody other than the Usos interfere in this match and cost Brock Lesnar the championship. And who should that man be but Bobby Lashley? I know I keep coming back to it. They had this great video package for Bobby Lashley on TV on Monday, by the way. I don't know if it means anything, but they gave this guy 3 minutes of TV time just showing his life story. It was almost like a babyface video package. They were showing you his amateur wrestling days and talking about, you know, his whole background, and he's the almighty, and they really built this guy up. Well, why not have Lashley interfere on behalf of Adam Pearce, who is not happy that Brock has been reinstated after what Brock did to him? Brock put his hands on a WWE official. He beat him up on TV, embarrassed him. And we still don't know how he got reinstated. But he's been reinstated, and maybe Adam Pearce isn't really too fond of that. And he enlists the help of Bobby Lashley to send a message to Brock Lesnar. Now, there is still the possibility of Paul Heyman siding with Lesnar. Maybe he really is with Brock, and he's going to turn on Roman Reigns. He's going to help Brock win the championship at day one. But would that usher in a babyface turn then for Roman Reigns? Or would that be, would we end up with a babyface Heyman-Lesnar combo? Because turning Roman Reigns right now would be a calamity. That would be a disastrous move. That would be awful. That should not happen right now. But I feel the story with Heyman is far from over. I don't know if they would split Lesnar away from Roman to somebody else without first wrapping up any loose ends with Paul Heyman. They've dropped little hints. Roman always accusing Paul of speaking with Lesnar. Did you call him? Did you give him a heads up? Right? The finish to the match at Crown Jewel when Heyman slid the belt into the ring and it looked like he could have been sliding it to Roman or he could have been sliding it to Brock. We still don't know. Brock was about to explain on TV on Friday how he got reinstated when Sami Zayn interrupted and we never got the explanation. Maybe it comes out that Paul Heyman helped in some way get him reinstated. I'm not sure what juice he would have to do that, but maybe it comes out in the end. All I know is I have been enjoying jovial babyface Brock Lesnar. He has shown more personality in the last 3 months than he has in the last decade. And I am not ready for it to end yet. Now we just need him to bring back the Brock Lock. Other news and notes. We have not seen Walter since he lost his NXT UK Championship to Ilya Dragunov at TakeOver 36 in August. That ended 870 days for him as the NXT UK Champion. He and Dragunov had two of the best matches in WWE in the past 2 years. Just fantastic matches. The problem with Walter has been, what do you do with him next? You know, in recent years, it's been said that he wasn't too keen on moving to the main roster because he didn't want to relocate to the United States. I was pitching for the longest time for him to finally move over to the main NXT brand. Even if he didn't want to relocate to the US, I thought that could be the best place for him because I didn't trust them to do right by him on the main roster anyway, and I still don't. But then they went and they blew up NXT right after he finally dropped the UK title. He finally drops the title after 870 days and they blew up NXT. And he doesn't fit NXT 2.0 at all. Especially if they're after a youth movement. Now comes the news that Walter recently split from his wife. He's now dating NXT UK women's star Ginny. They've posted pictures together on their social media. It's not really a secret. And now that he and his wife are no longer together, suddenly, it is said, he is more open to the idea of moving to the U.S. Not only that, but he tweeted a photo of himself in the gym looking to be in even better shape than he was the last time that I saw him in August. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not jacked or anything like that, but, you know, he's keeping himself in good shape. He could be preparing, it could be a sign that he's preparing for a possible move to Raw or SmackDown if he is working to transform his body in some way, because that is what you do. When you go to Raw or SmackDown, right, you got to look the part. We've seen Walter on the main roster before. Just wasn't full time. He wrestled the match on Raw 2 years ago against Seth Rollins in the lead up to Survivor Series when NXT was included in brand warfare that year. And then at Survivor Series, he was the first man eliminated 3 minutes into the match by Drew McIntyre. That gave us an early glimpse of what Vince McMahon thought of Walter. And it wasn't good. It ended the way a lot of us thought that it would. We've also seen people called up from NXT with the announcers forced to act like they don't even know who these people are. They did this big NXT relaunch and they inserted Von Wagner into the NXT Championship match. His first night in. And then they started featuring him on TV. And then one day, there he is, standing beside Adam Pearce on SmackDown. Remember that segment from a few weeks ago? Adam Pearce is in his office in the back and Von Wagner is standing next to him. He never interacted with him. Wagner never said a word and he was never spoken of again because he hasn't been on SmackDown since. He was just there. He was just standing there like his bodyguard for one night and it was never spoken of again. But after that segment, when they cut back to the announcers in the arena, they went to Pat McAfee. We had to listen to Pat McAfee ask, who was that guy? Like he was some rando off the street. Obviously, a lot of the people who watch SmackDown don't watch NXT. They won't know who Von Wagner is, but for the announcers to not even know who he is. Meanwhile, NXT airs on the same network as Monday Night Raw. You would think that it airs on public access the way they talk about some of these guys. They have shown very little respect to NXT, other than when it suited some sort of agenda. They went over strong at that Survivor Series because AEW had just debuted. And NXT was in direct competition at the time with AEW, and they wanted to put the brand over. And once they realized that the war was lost, they blew the whole thing up, and they finally decided, hey, it's time to go younger. It's going to take a lot of work to convince me that things would be any different with Walter on that main roster. They would call him Walter White and put a little Heisenberg hat on his fucking head. Walter is a special talent. He is very unique. He's got an intimidating look, but he's not, you know, jacked or anything like that, but he looks like he could beat the living crap out of you. Walter is the real deal. He should be booked as such. And if WWE is interested in bringing him to the main roster, and it sounds like they are, and if Walter is ready to make the jump, then may God have mercy on his soul. But they need to treat him like a special talent, not just another NXT call-up with the never-ending coming soon vignettes. If you're going to call up Walter, you debut him in the Royal Rumble match. He eliminates more people than anyone else in that match next year. He doesn't even have to win. He just needs to establish his dominance his first night in, not unlike how they debuted Vader in the Royal Rumble back in 96. Vader's first two nights in the company, he was booked like an absolute monster. What you do with Walter after that, there are several possibilities. I don't see an obvious opponent right now for Big E in the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania. That could be one road. And Walter becomes the final boss on Raw the way Roman Reigns is on SmackDown. I think, looking at the two rosters right now, SmackDown would be a better fit because you've got people like Drew McIntyre, you've got people like Sheamus, you've got people like Cesaro. Walter could have some fantastic battles with every single one of them. Walter could be built up for a match with Roman Reigns. Now, WrestleMania is too soon for that. They do have a UK pay-per-view planned for Labor Day weekend. You could do something there. That would mark 2 years, almost to the day, for Roman Reigns as the Universal Champion, if he doesn't drop the title between now and then. Whether or not they want to keep the title on him for that long, I don't know. And then there's Brock Lesnar. Now, I talked about how to get Lesnar against Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania and how Adam Pearce would be involved, right? I just talked about that. It is hard for me to fathom Lesnar losing again without some kind of shenanigans. And it cannot just be the Usos interfering in the match because they already did that once before. So that's why I pitched the idea of Lashley costing Lesnar the title on behalf of Adam Pearce, who holds a grudge for what Brock did to him. Now you've put Lesnar and Lashley on a collision course for WrestleMania. If they don't, though, if they don't want to do Lesnar against Lashley, and they have been resistant to it up to now, if Brock Lesnar gets screwed over again at day one, and he vows to win the Royal Rumble, he's going to enter himself into the Royal Rumble match, and he vows to win so he gets one more shot at Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. How huge would it be for Walter if he debuts in the Royal Rumble and he eliminates Brock Lesnar? It was a big deal a couple of years ago. Well, it'll be a couple of years ago next month when Drew McIntyre gave Brock the Claymore kick and kicked him out of the ring. I mean, they panned out that whole stadium. Everybody was on their feet. It was a huge moment. So if Brock gets eliminated by somebody, by one person, not a group of people, that's going to be a big deal. And it would be huge for Walter, who doesn't even have to win the entire match, but just eliminating Brock Lesnar would establish on day one for him that this guy is somebody to pay attention to if you don't know who he is. If I have to listen to one more person complain about how small all the wrestlers are these days and all their flippy stuff, you don't want flippy? You want two big guys beating the hell out of each other? That's a match that people would pay to see. Brock Lesnar against Walter at WrestleMania. So that's a few different ways. I've spit a few different ideas at you right there for how they could go with this. If Walter goes to SmackDown, and they eventually build to Walter against Roman, let's say later in the summer, by then you could have Imperium up on the main roster. Right now they're the NXT Tag Team Champions, Marcel Bartel and Fabian Aichner. They could link back up with Walter at some point in the next few months on the main roster. You could do Imperium against the Bloodline if you want. I'm not going to hold my breath on that because I thought the Bloodline against the New Day would make perfect sense for Survivor Series. And I mean, I guess we kind of got a version of that, but not really. I think that was a missed opportunity. But you could do that if you want. I want to see Walter on TV chopping the shit out of people. That's what I want to see. I want to see this guy kept special. He should not be on TV every week. But you can create an instant star if they recognize what they have in this man, what his strengths are. The one brief time they had him on TV, they failed to do that because he wasn't on the main roster. He wouldn't commit to wrestling in the United States. So, of course, they weren't going to, you know, give him a big push. It sounds like he has had a change of heart. Walter has no place in NXT UK anymore. He has outgrown NXT UK. It is a small audience. He already conquered that brand. There's nothing left for him to do there. He doesn't fit into this new NXT. He doesn't belong on the developmental brand. Walter is not a roll of film. He is not a young child. The man is fully developed. He does not need any more development. There is no good reason for him not to be one of the top five stars in the entire company a year from now. WrestleVotes posted an update on Elias, who somehow evaded the last few waves of mass releases in WWE, despite the fact that he hasn't been on television in months. WrestleVotes tweeted out, "Interesting note on Elias. Source states that they had no end plan for the graveyard vignettes, just shot them to kill off the music gimmick. His initial rebranding weeks ago looked similar to Randy Savage, with colorful trunks and a beard, so Vince and company didn't like it. Back to square one." Weeks back. It's more like months back when they started airing those vignettes of him walking through the graveyard. And then it was drop cold. It's not surprising they had no end game with it. They have no end game for a lot of shit that we see on TV. They're like Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. They just do things. That's the WWE way. Doesn't matter anyway. I mean, he's going to be released within the next few months. There's no way he survives the next few batches of cuts. I'm shocked he survived the first few. Speaking of cuts, Nia Jax has a fan site that was rebranded under her real name, which is Lena Fenene. That's her name. That's how you pronounce it. Lena Fenene. Or I guess Savalina is her full name. Anyway, fans took it to be that that was going to be her new ring name. And she took to Twitter to dispel those rumors. She said, LOL, newsflash, Lena is my real name. It is not another ring name, it's just my name, the name given to me at birth. Calm the fuck down, trolls. In all fairness, opponent Crippler would be a solid frontrunner if I ever decide to wrestle again. And she threw a laughing emoji in there. I guess that's funny to her. But she ended with this. She said, it is unlikely. Nia Jax says she is unlikely to wrestle again. That is because there are no major companies who are banging down her door to sign her. Makes it a lot easier to decide to just retire when you don't have your phone ringing off the hook from any major promotion who wants your services. And this month marks the end of an era. WWE will be ending all future home video releases in North America at the end of this year. This according to a report on WWEDVDnews.com. WWE has been putting out home videos going back to the Coliseum video days, all the way back in 1985. They have an entire section devoted to them on the network. The report states that while no specifics have been given regarding the move, the why is pretty obvious and in the end will boil down to revenue. I love it. Budget cuts. Not even the DVDs are safe from budget cuts. It says that coupled with the company putting less emphasis on DVD and Blu-ray in recent years and focusing more on content for the network are, reasons why this move is happening. It says the final DVDs will be the 2021 Survivor Series and a Best of Drew McIntyre compilation. So that said, you know, the rise and fall of ECW is probably the best DVD documentary they ever produced. I still have my free ECW skull cap, my ECW beanie that came with my copy of the DVD. That and the 3-disc Bret Hart set are my favorite of the DVDs that I've bought from them over the years. But, you know, I still have a lot of those old Coliseum videotapes. The oldest one that I own is, and it's, yeah, the case that it's in is pretty banged up. But it's the Hulkster, Hulk Hogan. They released a whole bunch of Hulk Hogan VHS tapes all throughout the 80s into the early 90s. This was one of the first ones, I think, that they produced. It's just called the Hulkster, Hulk Hogan. It's got a blue cover. It's got a picture of him with the old championship. Like the, this is the title that I think, I'm trying to think which title that was. It was the really small looking belt. I don't think they had it for very long. Was it it wasn't the Hogan 86 belt. So it was for a brief period in 85 when they had this belt. But that's what's on the cover. He's got that belt around his waist. And they've got the Iron Sheik match where he won the title from him in Madison Square Garden. They have the rematch between Hogan and Sheik where I believe Hogan bled. They have a cage match on there for the title with Hogan defending against Don Morocco. I remember popping that tape in quite often. I've got the first four WrestleManias. The fourth one is a double tape where when you open it up, there's this giant pop-up of Hogan's giant balding head. There are a lot of people who still enjoy physical media and are not big on streaming and digital downloads, but it's a dying medium. You know, I own a lot of VHS tapes and DVDs and CDs. I've gotten rid of some, but I plan to keep most of them. I just like knowing I still have them. But I know I'm a dinosaur when it comes to that stuff, and a lot of younger people are never going to understand how exciting it was when you were younger to go to the store and look for that tape, look for that CD. Even the idea of going to a store to buy something is a dated concept to a lot of people today. Why go to a store when you can just buy it on Amazon or you can use an app on your phone? That's the way of the world now. You know, that Full Metal album that WWE put out back in, what was it, 96 probably, right? 95, 96. It was the first album they put out in years. And I remember I couldn't find that thing anywhere. It was sold out everywhere. I even had my mother out there looking for it. She's the one who finally found it for me. It was some local music shop because it was sold out everywhere else. Imagine my disappointment when I popped that CD in to listen to Shawn Michaels' theme song and I realized it didn't sound anything like the arena version. It sounded awful. And there was no Twitter back then to go and complain about it. There was only RSPW. That was it. But I don't think I can adequately explain to our younger listeners the excitement that I would get to go to the store and search, you know, even like Toys R Us. Back when I was younger and I would buy the WWF action figures, the LJN figures, and then later on it was the Hasbros. You know, when they would come out with a new series, just to go to Toys R Us or KB Toys before they went out of business and got liquidated, I mean, we would walk into the store and my mother would lose sight of me. I knew exactly where the wrestling figures were relative to everything else. I would make a beeline for that section and you would go, you know, it was past the Ninja Turtles toys. You would go and it was like this glowing light, like a spotlight shone on all the wrestling figures. It was like Christmas. You would walk in there and just see that. It was like Christmas. And I guess people get excited in different ways these days, but I do remember those days. It was kind of the same way with the tapes. We got WWE getting out of the DVD business at the same time that Impact is going back to VHS. It's true. And shout out to Dylan and Luke. I did get your emails. Impact came out with a limited edition double VHS cassette for this year's Slammiversary pay-per-view with the Kenny Omega Sammy Callahan main event for $25, and it sold out almost instantly. Now, we don't know how limited this limited run was. I mean, they may have made 50 of them for all we know, but they did sell out, and that does not surprise me at all. I mean, look, limited edition collector's items are a big deal. Nostalgia sells. There is a market for this kind of vintage stuff. There's a lot of people who still buy vinyl records. I doubt anybody who bought that VHS bought it to watch on their VCR, if they even own a VCR. They probably won't even take it out of the box. It was an experiment worth trying, and it looks like it paid off for them, and they'll be doing more of them in the future. Impact could use some good news. Their Thanksgiving Day episode, and look, I get that it's Thanksgiving Day, and most wrestling shows tend to dip around the holidays. But that episode of Impact Wrestling on Thanksgiving did 48,000 viewers on Access TV. Less than 50,000 people watched that television show. That is awful. Any day of the year, that is awful. For a company that in another lifetime once did over 2 million viewers, I think they've got bigger problems than selling VHS tapes. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. Let me run through a couple of them here, maybe three or four of them. Scott in Kenosha, Wisconsin. AEW has a few former Ring of Honor World Champions on their roster. Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, Adam Cole, Cody Rhodes. Do you think it would be a good idea for one of these champions to show up at ROH at their last show and surprise win the title and take it with them back to AEW? Fans would see the belt on TV and would help keep ROH on people's minds. And if ROH does come back in 4 months, it would help make their return easier if their title has been seen on TV and in a positive way for the 4 months the company was on hiatus. I see absolutely no benefit whatsoever in that for AEW. Why would AEW even do that? What is in it for them? They have no working relationship that I know of with Ring of Honor. You know, Ring of Honor is its own entity, owned and operated by Sinclair. They have not worked together up to this point with AEW. Now they're going away. They claim for 4 months, possibly for good. Certainly this version of Ring of Honor as we know it is dead after next weekend, and whatever new version might pop up in the spring is going to look very different. I don't see how AEW benefits from it. I'm sure Ring of Honor would love it. They get their belt on TNT. But if I'm Tony Khan, I'm like, no. If that idea is presented to me, I don't see what it accomplishes. Other than just trying to be nice and just pay homage, I guess, to Ring of Honor and, you know, the history of that title and the history of that company. I don't see how it benefits AEW at all. And yeah, they have enough championships as it is on TV. If there's no active relationship between the two companies where there's like a talent exchange and there's something to be gained from it on both sides, then no, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm not entertaining that idea because I don't see what the upside is for me. Daniel from Hamburg, Germany. What if Randy Savage would have returned to WWE before WrestleMania 18? Who do you think he could have worked with? Before WrestleMania 18, following in Hogan's shadow again, I see. We had Hogan come back at WrestleMania 18. That would have been the worst time for Savage to come back. Like every other part of his career, he would have been overshadowed by the Hulkster. Look, Savage by that point, 2001, 2002, you know, certainly when we saw him in TNA in 2004, he was a shell of his former self. I mean, the injuries had just ravaged him, his knees, and, you know, he wasn't moving around very well. He was so jacked up. I mean, that was not the Randy Savage that I remembered. That was not the Randy Savage that was out there having these great classic matches that I remember. He was long past his expiration date in the ring as far as like a full-time performer. Now, could you have brought him in to do a special match here and there? Yeah, probably. And with the right opponent, he probably could have gone out there and had a pretty decent match. You know, him against The Rock would have been an obvious match. And there were always rumors that The Rock wanted to work a WrestleMania match against Randy Savage. You know, maybe in 2005. And his contract ran out at the end of 04. And he was greatly offended by this. And WWE was like, oops, it was a clerical oversight. And that was the end of the relationship for about 7 or 8 years with The Rock and WWE. But there were always rumors that Rock was hoping to get Randy Savage in to do a match at WrestleMania, I guess that would have been 21. So I know there was interest on The Rock's part in working with Savage. I'm sure if Savage would have come back around 01 or 02, Rock and Savage would have been an obvious match to do. Savage and Triple H would have been an obvious match to do, given the comments he had made previously about Stephanie McMahon. And that opens up a whole other can of worms that we won't get into. So there were some obvious matches that you could have done. You could have done Hogan against Savage, right? I mean, look, they did Hogan against Flair in 2002, a few months after Hogan came back, and I don't remember if it popped a rating or not, but they did it on TV. It was a title match on Raw in the main event. So we probably would have had Hogan against Savage or at least a Mega Powers reunion at some point. So you could have definitely done stuff with Savage, but understand that he was an absolute shell of what he used to be at that point. And I think he understood that, and that's why we never saw him. And he did come back very briefly in TNA, and he was all covered up in black. He didn't do much. And we never saw him in the ring again after that because I think he knew his time had come and gone. He didn't want to go out there and embarrass himself. And his body was just completely gone by that point. So I don't know what you would have done with him outside of doing a special match here and there. I would have loved to have seen Savage back in some role. You know, not as a full-time performer, but like I said, a big kind of dream match here and there. And he used to do announcing. I kind of like Savage as an announcer. I know some people didn't. I don't think Jim Ross did. But unfortunately, we never got to see it. Julius from the Bronx. What if Shawn Michaels got drafted to SmackDown at some point during the Ruthless Aggression era between 2002 and 2008? I think we would have had a lot of kick-ass matches with Shawn Michaels against Brock Lesnar and Shawn Michaels against Eddie Guerrero. We did get Shawn Michaels against Kurt Angle. We did get Shawn Michaels against Edge, eventually. But just look at the roster that SmackDown had during that period. I think Lesnar and Eddie are the key ones who stand out to me. We absolutely would have gotten those matches, but that was on his Bible study night. That's the reason why Shawn didn't want to go to SmackDown. I think on Wednesdays, he and his wife had Bible study, and so That was back when SmackDown was taped on Tuesdays, and it just didn't jive with his schedule. So we were deprived. We were potentially deprived of a Shawn Michaels-Eddie Guerrero match because he had Bible study. And Scotty, from Columbus, Georgia, buy, sell, rent on who needed the win more over Triple H at WrestleMania. Booker T at WrestleMania 19, Randy Orton at WrestleMania 25, or Sting at WrestleMania 31. The key word there is needed. And the person who needed that win the most at WrestleMania was Booker T. Now, him beating Sting was incredibly stupid. Him beating Randy Orton, I thought, it's fine, whatever. I mean, I didn't really care about that match. But Booker T is the most egregious of them, just the way the match was built up. And the way they made Booker out to be a clown, and some of the ways that he described him on TV, and you're beneath me, and people like you don't win this, and all, just every aspect of how that match was built up was tailor-made for Booker T to just stuff it down his throat and shove it right back in his face and win the championship. And when he didn't, and the manner in which he lost on that one pedigree, that was the worst of the bunch. He needed it more than the others. Sting should not have lost to Triple H at WrestleMania, but Sting was a made guy, and you know, it's not like it killed Sting. I mean, all those guys ended up doing pretty well for themselves, including Booker. But at the time, and then whatever Booker went on to do after that, it didn't do him any favors. Just in the context of that story they were telling, he should have won that match. He needed that win more. I would buy on Booker, I would rent on Sting, and I would sell on Orton. So if you have questions for me, you know the drill. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com. That is also the PayPal address you can use if you want to send anything in that way. Of course, there's always the button on the website if you don't want to just punch in the email address. Follow me on Twitter @SolemnMonster. I'll be live tweeting probably during War Games tonight, live on YouTube as soon as the pay-per-view is over. I guess technically it is a pay-per-view. It's the only pay-per-view all month of any kind from any of the major promotions, WWE or AEW, is War Games tonight, the first major show of the 2.0 era. So I will be live tonight talking about all that. Back with you next Sunday for episode 734. House of Glory on Fight TV this Saturday. Do tune in if you will not be there live. And I will see you guys, I guess, on Wednesday night. That's the next time I will be live. After tonight will be Dynamite on Wednesday, and of course Rampage. We might do a hybrid stream maybe this Friday, SmackDown and Rampage. I'll let you guys know on Twitter. So a lot of live content, a lot of other content coming to the YouTube channel. Please subscribe, and I will see you for more Sound Off next Sunday. Thank you for all the support. Till then, take care, guys.
The Solemnmonster Sounds Off.
The 24/7 nonsense on this show taught us this week that the single most dangerous maneuver isn't the RKO, it isn't the Hurt Lock, it isn't the Curb Stomp, it is the roll-up, because nobody is able to kick out of it. The only positive thing I can say about any of this is that at least it came during the lowest rated hour in Raw history. The less eyeballs on this shit, the better.
The Solemnmonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solemnmonster on Twitter @Solemnmonster.
Solemnmonster.
Solemnmonster.
Solemnmonster sounds off.